A single sugary soda has impact, new diets for statin users, measles on the comeback trail, and we'll bring you a special interview segment with noted pediatrician Dr. Stephen Pelton, who joined me by phone this week to talk about challenges with getting kids vaccinated in some instances. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. This week, it's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and we like this podcast for nurses by nurses, don't we? I'd like to take the opportunity to thank you for checking out the show this week. In our nursing and healthcare news this week, we're going to be taking a look at basic dietary changes and how they can impact health significantly for both good and bad. Then, in this week's special interview segment, recorded a few weeks ago during Vaccine Awareness Week, I got the chance to sit down and chat with pediatrician Dr. Stephen Pelton to learn about how he works to influence parents to get their kids the required childhood vaccines on time. That's coming up later on in this episode. Before we get to the news and the rest of the show, though, I want to make sure you are following up on all the information in this and every episode by heading over to nursingshow.com. When you get there, check the links out in the episode show notes. There are other articles and links to other things like our mobile app, which is absolutely free, student nurse tips, and a lot of other things. But you need to follow up on the information you get in the show and hear what I talk about, and then see how you can apply it to your own nursing scope of practice safely. If you want to get back in touch with me, please drop me an email. You can always send those in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I do get back to every email that comes in, but send me links to things like news items you'd like me to cover or ideas for future episodes. Whatever the case may be, keep them coming. I love getting them. That's it. I'll have some more contact information coming on later on in this episode, but let's go ahead and get on into this week's news items coming right up. First up in the news this week, we're going to be looking at the first of two stories, looking at how even small dietary changes can affect our health both positively and negatively. In the first story, we look at a study that examined the association between sugary soda consumption and the development of type 2 diabetes. The study out of Europe looked at almost 30,000 people, half of whom developed type 2 diabetes in the 16 years that they did the study, and another half of a group that people that didn't have type 2 diabetes. They were looking for differences in lifestyle and diet that might influence the development of this and other diseases. The study was from 1991 to 2007, looking at people who drank at least one sugary soda a day and found they were 30% more likely to develop diabetes than those who didn't. Now, this finding was isolated from both the patient's BMI and their overall caloric intake, suggesting that there's a correlation between the blood sugar spike drinking the sodas gives you. Interestingly enough, even those who drank diet soda had an increased risk for developing type 2 diabetes, but when considered with BMI and caloric intake, the risk was considered insignificant. Other diseases were mentioned in the article, including stroke risk and heart disease, but the risk for each additional soda went up for everything, for each additional soda you consumed each day. So we know that small changes can make a difference, so maybe we cut back from 3 sodas a day to 2 sodas a day, or from 2 sodas a day to just 1. Any small change can make a difference, and you can help influence that change by making suggestions of these types of insignificant changes that people can make. Think about this for your at-risk patients and yourself, for instance. Give them some real goals to reach that are both achievable and realistic. I'll continue to focus on this type of article in future episodes here on The Nursing Show, but you can always let me know what you do when you're talking to patients and people in the community, too. Next up in the news is a story about people who take statin drugs and how they seem to think they can get away with a higher fat diet because of it. The article in question refers to research from UCLA analyzing statin users' responses to the U.S. National Health and Nutrition Survey from 1999 to 2000 and again from 2009 to 2010. The survey data said that statin users are now consuming nearly 10% more calories and fat than they did 10 years ago. Now, those of you who know me probably know I'm not a fan of pharmaceutical substitution for behavioral modification. I've long believed that we often are giving somebody a pill that does something they could do on their own. They begin to believe they don't have to follow the rules. This study, I think, proves that point. While 15 years ago, statin users were clearly getting the message to change their diets along with taking a pill, today that message seems to be getting lost, if they're getting it at all. Prescribing drugs like statins is meant to be part of a treatment regimen and not a license to, as the study's authors put it, put butter on your steaks. This falls securely on us folks as healthcare professionals. Nurses and doctors need to do a better job of educating our patients and give them really clear and explicit instructions to take along with their medications. That includes dietary changes. Statin drugs are prescribed to 1/6 of U.S. adults at this time, and a lot of them aren't getting the message about dietary modification to go along with it. So look for opportunities to talk to patients when you see that they're prescribed statins and ask them what they're doing to reduce fat and caloric intake while they're taking it. Get to the bottom of their understanding. Really find out and evaluate what they know and don't know, and then help them understand better the cardiovascular risks they're facing. Every conversation is a chance to influence a person's life for the better, so let's step up to the plate and get this done. Finally, in the news this week, I take a look at the comeback that many childhood diseases are making right now in the face of decreased vaccine compliance with our children. According to the CDC website, there are nearly 200 cases of measles and 15 outbreaks throughout the U.S. so far this year. This is a large number when you compare it to previous years, already matching last year's total. The California Department of Public Health reports 60 cases so far this year, compared to 4 at the same time frame last year. The vast majority of these cases are in individuals who have not been vaccinated, and the CDC is recommending that healthcare professionals consider measles in all cases where patients present with a fever accompanied by a rash. The challenge in the rash is that people don't know what it looks like anymore, and they can be contagious for up to 4 days before the rash even appears. So take some time to educate yourself about the measles rash and what it looks like. For many of us, we've never seen it before. It's something that would be unheard of 30 years ago. But I'll put some links to the CDC links for measles in the show notes so you can look at pictures of the measles rash and follow up on information about the measles for healthcare professionals. In the meantime, make sure adults, children, and especially younger kids and infants have received their recommended vaccines. If they aren't sure, check with a prescriber, either a nurse practitioner or a physician, about whether they might need a measles booster to protect them and the folks around them. Remember, vaccines don't just protect the vaccinated, they also protect the community at large. Check out the links and resources I include in the show notes for this episode. In a follow-up to that last news item on measles making a comeback, I thought I'd bring you a special interview I did with longtime pediatrician Stephen Pelton on vaccines for children. Many vaccine-preventable childhood diseases are still circulating in the U.S. and are only a plane ride away in many cases. In fact, 300 American children die each year from vaccine-preventable diseases. That's why it's important that children, especially the infants and the youngest of our children, receive the recommended vaccinations on time. For each birth cohort that abides by the CDC's recommended immunization schedule, 14 million cases of disease could be prevented and 33,000 lives saved. A few weeks ago, it was National Infant Immunization Week, a week set aside as a reminder to parents to make sure they schedule their well baby checkups and vaccinations. Here to explain more about this initiative and how healthcare professionals like you can influence positive choices regarding vaccination is Dr. Stephen Pelton. Hi, Dr. Stephen Pelton.
Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
Great, great. Just want to welcome you to the Nursing Show. This is a show for healthcare professionals, nurses and others. And so my questions might be a little bit different than what you have been dealing with already this morning. But
Perfect.
We want to just talk a little bit about the challenges with getting patients to maintain their vaccine schedules. And as a longtime pediatrician, I'm sure you've come into those situations where parents are resistant to use vaccines. Could you relate some of those experiences to us?
Sure. I think one of the most common is when I approach families about influenza vaccine, the families will say, well, I got the influenza vaccine last year, but I got influenza anyway. And of course, that's in part because the influenza vaccine is not as good as many of our vaccines. It's about 70% protective rather than the 95% protective that many of our other vaccines are. And second, when a child gets a flu-like illness, often it's not due to influenza virus, but it's due to another virus that's circulating in the community, whether it be RSV or adenovirus or parainfluenza virus. And therefore, individuals get confused that they got the flu vaccine, but they think they got the flu anyway. So it requires a lot of work from our clinicians, both pediatricians, family practitioners, nursing personnel, nurse practitioners, to educate families about the value of the flu vaccine, the prevention of complications of flu, such as pneumonia, and otitis, and sinusitis, and the fact that not every viral respiratory infection is the flu, and therefore they will get viral respiratory infections that are not the flu that the vaccine doesn't prevent.
And that patient education factor is so important, as you just said. One of the things that we're running into, I've seen a lot in the news about measles outbreaks in California and other places. We're really seeing a rebound of some of these previously defeated childhood illnesses. What are some of the challenges that you've seen encouraging parents to stay on schedule with their childhood vaccines?
Yeah, I think the parents often feel that it's a crowded schedule, and they don't, again, understand why do we have to immunize young infants? Why can't we wait till they're 2 or 3 or 4 or even older? And the reality is that most of these infectious diseases, measles, chickenpox, Haemophilus meningitis, pneumococcal pneumonia, are all much more serious in the first 6 to 12 months of life than they are as the child gets older and develops more immunity and larger airways. And so it's very important to get the immunizations begun early in life, to have the child be protected as early as possible, and that indeed missing those or delaying those early immunization extends the period of risk for the child. A good example is whooping cough or pertussis vaccine. Almost all the outbreaks, if there are deaths, they're associated with children less than 4 to 6 months of age. Why? They have smaller airways. They have more difficulty when they get whooping cough maintaining their airway. When a 3 or a 4 year old gets whooping cough, it's a serious disease. It's a prolonged cough. It's a lot of illness, but it's not a fatal disease. When a 4 month old gets it, it can be a fatal disease, and that's why it's so important to start early and have early protection.
You know, it's interesting. I think as a society, we've kind of forgotten what these childhood illnesses were like in a time when we didn't have these vaccines. I know, you know, you talk to my mother about this. She lost an older sibling as a baby due to a childhood illness that was later treatable by vaccines. She's a huge proponent of vaccines because she lived with a family that lost a child to vaccines. Do you think that these types of reminders of almost, I don't want to say scare tactics, but telling them that there is a real danger has any effect on educating parents?
I think what you've described is a reality, and one of the challenges is that we've been so successful in almost miraculous in terms of the elimination of polio, the reduction in measles, the prevention of whooping cough, the protection against Haemophilus and pneumococcal meningitis, that indeed the public has forgotten that these are just below the surface, ready to return as soon as our immunization rates fall. And I think you referred to the fact that we've had a measles outbreak in the U.S. So we've had 129 cases in the first 4 months of 2014, the most in any four-month period in the last 20 years, I believe. Half of those kids have not been immunized. And it's a reflection of the fact that parents are concerned about the safety of vaccines, and indeed they need to be reassured. And the U.S. is doing as much work as anybody in the world on tracking vaccine histories, making sure that there's not a link between emergency room visits or chronic disease and vaccines. And as I've said, the Institute of Medicine has a wonderful report about the safety of vaccines. And again, if you go to the website at the cdc.gov/vaccines, you'll see a lot of information about vaccine safety that should be reassuring to parents that indeed most of the problems are just local, small reactions that are transient and short-lived and self-relieved.
And the website you just mentioned has great information. I always put the CDC website out there, not just for parents, but for clinicians and healthcare professionals as well, because there's just a tremendous amount of resources there to help you not only educate yourself, but be better prepared to educate your patients.
Absolutely. And if you go on it today, you'll see there's a discussion about the measles outbreak. There's a discussion about rotavirus vaccine, all of the things that are up to date and on people's mind that health professionals are talking about when it comes to vaccines.
Well, Dr. Pelton, I want to thank you for taking some time to talk to the Nursing Show audience and share with us some of your experience as a pediatrician and helping people understand the need for vaccines. We hope to have you on maybe in a future episode.
Thanks a lot, Jamie, and have a great day.
You too. That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. You know, make sure you are following up on the information you hear in this week's episode. You may have picked up some ideas and tidbits. Head over to The Nursing Show site at nursingshow.com and check out the show notes link right there at the top of the page. Over there, you'll find listings for all the episodes of The Nursing Show, including the most recent one all the way back to the very first Nursing Show episode. But it's important for you to get the full information there so that you can understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, and I hope you do want to get back in touch with me, go ahead and shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me in your comments. Maybe you have a question about an episode, a suggestion, or a news link you'd like me to feature on a future episode. Whatever thing, support the Nursing Show community and lend your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter by checking out the link on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site. Just fill out that short form, and all the links from each episode can be sent directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me over on social media sites under the handle PodMedic. So catch me over there at twitter.com/PodMedic and over at facebook.com/PodMedic. Friend or follow me over on those sites. You can also become a member of the community over at Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page. You can find that over at facebook.com/nursingshow. Just click the like button there at the top of the page and join the conversation there. I post other nursing articles and pictures and things like that each week that don't end up in the episode, so make sure you check all of that out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back soon with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. It comes out here every Friday for you to wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.